Tonight's shir is on this week's parsha, which is Parshas Pa'alosucha, and the title of the shir tonight is Moshe's Short Tefillah for Miriam. So the shir, we're going to look at the end of the parsha. The end of the parsha talks about the story of how Miriam got saras because she spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe, and after that, Aaron really begs Moshe, and Moshe davens on behalf of Miriam, and his tefillah is answered. So we're going to look at the nature of that tefillah at the end of the parsha, the tefillah of Moshe. So let's look at the psukim inside. We'll look at source number one. It's Bamidbar, Perek Yed Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. So immediately following Miriam getting tzaras for speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe, it says as follows, Vayomer Aaron el Moshe bi Adoni yedaber al nafsa sheis alinu chatas asher no'alnu v'asher chatanu. So Aaron says to Moshe, please, my master, do not bring upon us a sin for acting foolishly and sinning towards you. And then Aaron beseeches Moshe and asks Moshe that Miriam not be like a dead person whose flesh has been eaten, meaning help Miriam remove her tzaras. So what does Moshe do? So Moshe screams out to Hashem saying, he says, Hashem, please heal her. And that's his tefillah. And then at the end, in Yud Aleph, right after, it says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe v'Avia Yerok Yerak b'Fanel Lo Sikalim Shivasim Yom Tisagir Shivasim Yom Michutz Machane V'Achar Tiasev." Hashem says to Moshe that if she really deserves to be sequestered for 7 days, and after that she can come back into Klal Yisrael, into the Machane. So this set of psukim is just presenting us this back and forth. Aaron asked Moshe to daven for Miriam so that Miriam's saras be removed and she be healed. And Moshe does it. So Moshe's tefillah is a very short tefillah. It's Kael Na Refan Allah. That's his whole tefillah. Hashem, please heal her now. Please. So that's Moshe's tefillah. So let's define. So the question or the focus of the shir is going to be understanding the nature of that tefillah. What's the nature? And of course, the title is Moshe's short tefillah. So we'll understand an idea about the nature of the length of his tefillah. But before we get to that, let's understand a basic idea in this tefillah of Moshe. So if we look in Rashi, Rashi is interesting. He quotes, look in source number two. It's Rashi on this pasuk, and I cut out the first part of Rashi and the end part. This part is actually an independent element in Rashi, and it says as follows, Lamor. So he's going on pasuk at Gimel. It says, Vayitzak Moshe al Hashem Lamor. That Moshe, he screamed out to Hashem saying, so Rashi says, what does it mean saying, lemor? Ma talmud lomar, what does this teach us? Amar lo, heshivani, imata merape osa imlav. So Moshe was adamant, and he said, answer me right away, answer me, if you're actually going to fulfill the request of my tefillah, if you're going to actually heal her or not. Tell me the answer. Ache shivu v'avia yerokirak. And then he stood there, Moshe stood there waiting for an answer, and then Hashem answered, and he said, no, I'm going to heal her, she has to wait 7 days, and then she's going to be healed of her tzaras. So now Rashi continues, it says, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah Omer, so Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah said, Ba'arba'a mekomos, there are four cases in the Torah, Bikesh Moshe, Melefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashivo, Im Yaseh Shalos Avimlo. There are four instances in the Torah where Moshe asks Hashem, he davens for something, or he asks Hashem to answer his she'ela, his request. And what are those four situations? Kiyotzebo. So what are they? Vayidaber Moshe lefnei Hashem lemor. It uses the word lemor in Shemos. Early on in Shemos, Moshe says to Hashem, saying, and it says, Matam lomar lemor. Why does it say lemor? Heshivani im golam ata im lav. So Moshe stood there and he was waiting to find out if Hashem really wanted to redeem the Jewish people from Egypt and take them out or not. So the first situation, which we're going to look at each one inside, but the first situation where Moshe stood there and waited for an answer was with regard to the question about whether Hashem was going to be Goel of the Jewish people or not, whether he's going to redeem them or not. Ache shivu atasira. And Hashem answered, yes, of course. And he says, and that's where we get Yetzias Mitzrayim. But he says, you'll see what I'm going to do to Mitzrayim. And he answers Moshe's request or question. Kiyotzebo, another example. Vayidaber Moshe el Hashem lemor yifkod Hashem lekei ruchos l'chol basar. So another situation was when Moshe was when he was told that he was not going to go into Eretz Yisrael and he was going to die. So there was another leader that replaced him, and he davens to Hashem and he says, choose somebody who's going to be the proper leader. And he waited there until Hashem answered, Heshivu kach lecha, that it was Yoshua take Yehoshua and do smicha. So the third, so there are right now at this point there are three situations and one more. Kiyotzebo va'eschanan el Hashem ba'isahi le'mor yeshivu rav lach. The last situation is where Moshe davens to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem says no, stop talking to me about this request. So there are four situations. Let me just summarize. So Rashi's saying that there are four cases in the Torah where Moshe davens to Hashem or asks Hashem a question and he needs to know the answer. And he's saying, I'm not going to leave. I want to know the answer. Which way you're going to go? So one of them is in our parsha. It's by Miriam. So he said to Hashem, please heal her. And Lamor means that I'm going to wait here and wait for your answer. The second situation was Va'era and Shemos, where Moshe asks Hashem if he's really going to be Goel, the Jewish people, or not, and Hashem says yes. The third situation is by replacing him as a leader. He wants to know who's going to replace him, who's going to be the next leader of the Jewish people, and Hashem says Yehoshua, and he answers him. And the last situation is in Va'eschanan and Devarim, where Moshe asks Hashem if he can go into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem says, no, you cannot. So we have to understand, the question on Rashi is, what's the relationship between all these situations? First of all, what's the idea, the main idea, that Moshe stood there and he waited for an answer? He wanted an answer. Ache Shivu, he stayed there until God answered him. What is that idea? In what situations did Moshe insist on waiting for an answer to his tefillah? And the second question is, what's the relationship between these four cases? Is there a common thread between all these four cases? And is there one idea that we can explain as to why it was necessary for Moshe to wait there and to say to Hashem, please answer me and tell me what you're going to do? So why? What's that idea? So that's the question. So why don't we explore this Rashi in depth? We'll go through each situation a little more, and then by analyzing each situation, maybe we'll get a clearer picture of what Rashi's trying to tell us or teach us about Moshe's tefillah, and also about Moshe's insistence on finding an answer to his tefillah. Okay, so that's the question. So if anybody has any questions, just stop me in the share, or if you want to add anything or have any possibilities, so just stop me. But those are the two questions. You know, why did Moshe insist on getting an answer in these cases, and what's the common thread, the common theme? So if we look in source number three, Rashi, the first, other than Kel Narafana law, the first example after that is by Moshe and Hashem, and it's weird because the psukim themselves don't allude to what Rashi's saying. Because if you look in source number three, the pasuk that Rashi quotes, and it's from the Sifri, it says, "Vayidaber Moshe lefnei Hashem leimor, heim bnei Yisrael lo shamu elai ve'echi shmeini faro v'ani aral sfasayim." So Moshe says that the Jews aren't going to listen to me, and Paro's not going to listen to me, and also I can't speak well, I'm aral sfasayim. And this is the lemor. If you look in source number three, it says, "Vayidaber Moshe lefnei Hashem lemor." So what's the lemor? Lemor implies that Moshe was insistent on finding out the answer to this. So if you look in source number four, let's just look at Rashi. He says, "Ve'echi shmeini faro." This is one of the kavachomers in the Torah. But then he says, "Aral svasayim." He says, "Atum svasayim." Moshe says that he was closed lips. He had trouble speaking. He couldn't enunciate words properly. V'chein kol lashon orla. Anytime it says orla, this is an important Rashi. Ani omer shu atum. The word orel or orla means closed. Orla oznam. It uses in Yirmiyahu. It says that their ears were closed. Atuma mash mishmoa. Their ears were closed off from hearing the ideas. Arle lev, atum mahavin. When the Torah uses the term arle lev, it means that you're closed off from understanding. You're warped. You're closed. And Chabakuk says shisea gam ata vehe arel veata mishkeros kosa klala. It means that you should drink and you'll be closed off. The drunkenness will close you off. Orlas basar shagid atum mechusava. So too by mila, we use the term orla in terms of the foreskin, and that's an idea that it's that the gid is closed off, it's covered. V'orlasem orlaso asulo otem mechisui iser shiavdil bifnei achilaso and shaloshanim yelachem arelim atum mechusav muvdal mila achlo. All those cases of orel means closed off. So Moshe is just saying that the Jews aren't going to listen to me, and Paro is not going to listen to me. And Rashi, based on the Sifri, learns out over here that this was one of the cases where Moshe was insistent on Hashem answering this idea that Moshe was concerned with. And if you look in source number five, which is the answer, the Sifri says, it says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe atah sireh asher aseh lefaro ki v'yad chazaka yishalchem uv'yad chazaka yigarshem miratzo." So Hashem says, "No, I'm going to take them out, and I'm going to do what I need to do to Paro, and I'm going to take out the juice. So the only weird thing, I don't think we can answer this. If anybody has an answer, I'd be definitely want the answer. But the Sifri is kind of out of order, because they're saying that Moshe's insistent on an answer is from Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Beis, but the answer comes earlier. It's from Perek Vav Pasuk Aleph. So it's kind of weird that it's out of order. But the main idea here, we're, like I said, we're going to try to create a common thread. But the main idea in this first example is that Moshe is requesting from Hashem to know if Hashem's going to be Goel the Jewish people or not. And Hashem's response is, yes, I'm going to destroy the Mitzrayim and I'm going to take the Jewish people out with Yad Chazaka. So this was one of the cases, again, that Rashi quotes, where Moshe was insistent on getting an answer to this idea. He wanted to know for a fact, or he wanted to know for sure whether or not Hashem would be Goel the Jewish people, he would redeem them and take them out or not. So that was the first case. What are the other cases? Look in source number 6. The other case was by Yehoshua. It says, Vaydaber Moshe Hashem Lemor. So Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Yifkod Hashem, no, sorry, Moshe spoke to Hashem saying, Lemor, again, use the same term. Yifkod Hashem Elokei Ruchos L'chol Basar Ish Halayda. So he says to Hashem that he should appoint a person as the leader on the congregation. Asher Yitzei Lifnehem, Asher Yavo Lifnehem, Asher Yotziyim, Asher Yiviyim, Velosia Adas Ad Hashem, Katzon Asher Ein Lahem Roeh. So Moshe, he says to Hashem that he should choose the leader who's going to take them and bring them out, and that the Jewish people shouldn't be like cattle without a shepherd. So Moshe said, so Hashem said to Moshe, take Yehoshua and put your hands on him. And you should publicly proclaim Yehoshua through smicha and giving him some of the light that he had in his face. That's what the Torah says, by demonstrating that Yehoshua would be the next leader. So Moshe, this is the second example where Moshe was insistent on getting an answer. He asked Hashem to replace him with somebody, and he's insistent, I'm not going to leave here until I get the answer, appropriate answer. So this is a very important Rashi to our idea. So the next, I guess it would be the third case, Rashi says like this, Yivkod Hashem, Kevan Shama Moshe Sha'amar Lo Amakom Tein Nachlas Tzlofcha Livnosov. Once Moshe heard about the idea that the Nachla, the inheritance of Tzlofcha, should be given to his daughters, Amar Higia Sha'a She'espa Tzarki She'yirshu B'ni Eskidulasi. Moshe thought that his son was going to take over for him. So Moshe really believed that Gershom was going to take over and lead the Jewish people. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo chein also b'machshava lefanai. I don't have the same thought process as you, Moshe. Kedai hu Yehoshua litol schar shimusho. Yehoshua deserves it for serving you. Shalo mosh mitocha oel. He never left Moshe's side. V'zehu shamar shlomo notzar te'ena yochal perya. So the answer, so in Rashi's saying that in this third case where Moshe was insistent on getting an answer, so in the third case, Moshe really believed that it was going to be his son, and yet it wasn't his son, it was Yehoshua. So that's the third example. So again, let me just repeat it, because it's important to remember, and then we'll get to one main idea. The first example is Kel Narufan Allah. Moshe said, I need to know whether you're going to heal my sister or not. The second case was Moshe wanted to know whether Hashem was going to be Goel the Jewish people or not. The third case is Moshe wanted to know who was going to lead the Jewish people after him. And Rashi says that he thought it was going to be his son, and it turns out that it was Yehoshua. The fourth case, which is the last case Rashi brings down, is Va'eschanan al Adoshem. Look in source number 8. It says, Va'eschanan al Adoshem ba'isahi lemor, Adoshem elokim atach ilosa larosus avdecha eskadlecha vesyadecha chazakasher, mikel v'ashamayim v'aretz asher yaseh ma'asecha v'chigvurosecha. So Moshe says that you've begun to show me all your greatness, and he says to Hashem, let me go into Eretz Yisrael and let me see the greatness of the land of Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem says, Vayisaber Hashem bilamanchem, or Moshe says that Hashem got angry, v'lo shama elai, v'yomar Hashem elai rav lach al tosef daber elai od badavar hazeh. And Hashem says to Moshe, stop asking me for this request to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the fourth example is that Moshe, when he, after his chait, and he was told that he wasn't going to Eretz Yisrael, he thought, maybe I can get a tefillah in there, and maybe Hashem will change his mind, or I'll change the hashgacha. Kamash Mula, note that Moshe was told, stop asking me to go into Eretz Yisrael. And in this situation also, Rashi says that Moshe was insistent on getting an answer. Look in source number 9. So one other point here. So look in source number 9, it says, Va'etzchanan, Ein chanun b'chol makom el lashem matnas chinam. So Moshe knew that this was a freebie, that he really didn't deserve to go into Eretz Yisrael, but he was asking for a gift from Hashem. Alpha pishyesh lam tzadikim litlos v'maaseim atovim, even though tzadikim can rely on their good deeds, ein mevakshim esamakom el matnas chinam. They only ask Hashem from a sense of feeling like they deserve it. They always ask for a free gift. Lefish amarlo v'chanosias asher achon, amarlo b'lashon v'eschanan, davar acher ze'echad me'asar l'shona shenikres tefila. So Moshe was davening here. This is another lashon of tefila. So now this Rashi says like this, go to the last one, Lamor. So Lamor, what is Lamor? Ze'echad mishalosh mekomo she'amar Moshe lefnei amakom eini manincha acho tedienim tasha she'ilasiyim lav. This is one of three places where Moshe is insistent on Hashem giving him an answer, whether one way or the other. So what's the question here on Rashi, before we answer this, we give an idea in the shir. What's the question? Does anybody know the question? So in the first Rashi we saw in our Parsha, he says that there are four examples of where Moshe was insisted on getting an answer from Hashem. The first one was Kel Na Rafanala by Miriam, which is our Parsha. The second one was by Va'era, where Moshe asks if Hashem's going to be goal them, and he was insistent on getting an answer. The third one was by Yoshua. He wanted to know who was going to lead, and he was insistent on knowing the answer right away. And the last one was by Va'eschanan. And now this Rashi, in source number 9, says that there are only three places where Moshe did that. So it's a stira. On the one hand, Moshe in our Parsha says that there are four instances where Moshe was insistent on Hashem answering him. And in this Rashi, in source number 9, Rashi says there are only three places where Moshe was insistent that Hashem answer him. So which one is it? Is it three places or is it four places? That's the question. Okay? So last point, and then we'll get, like I said, we'll try to, I'll give you some examples, some ideas to try to open up this area in Rashi. So the last point is to answer this question of the stira, the Sifsei Chachamim brings down the Ro'am, and he gives an answer. So look in source number 10. So how do you reconcile the two Rashis? The first Rashi says four cases where Moshe insisted on Hashem answering him, and Rashi over here in Va'eschanan says only three cases. So which one is it? Which case is left out? Which case is not included in this Rashi, and why does he leave it out? That's the question. So he says, Kasav Ra'am, the Ra'am wrote, Tzarech Iyun DeBesifri, so he needs to explain Rashi. And the Sifri, Chashiv Heimekomos, there's five places. Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Omer Bedal, Mekomos, Spikish Moshe. And Rav Elazar ben Azariah says, in four places, Moshe requested an answer to his tefillah, and Hashem... And Hashem answered him one way or the other. Vehevi kulam im vehevi kulam, and all of them are brought in. Im kain divrei Rashi delo kiman v'nirli. So Rashi over here is not like either of them. V'nirli hadikas of Rashi hachas ze'echad migimel makomos. So when Rashi says that this is one of three places, Rosh Lomar shehispalo Moshe aleihem uvikish ma'kadosh baruch hu sheimale shalosav. So Moshe davened that Hashem should answer and fulfill his request. And also Hashem should tell him whether or not his request would be fulfilled. Kimo Gabi Miriam. So the first one is Miriam. That was by Yoshua. Like Rashi, that he wanted his sons to be inherit, and he wanted to know the answer, was his sons inherit or not? Acharav Gdilaso. Ukmo Shapirash Rashi Sham. The Hacha Hispalo Shiavor Yardin. And then here also, he davened so that he should go over the Yarden. Aval Shnai Machirim, the other two examples, Rashi only quotes one other example. Shemevi Shama, Dahainu Ha'echad, Vaidaber Moshe Lefni Hashem Lemor, Ma'esel Amazeh, Shamar Moshe Hodiini, Nofel Anu Biyadam. We didn't see that one in Rashi, but the other one, Osan Shnei Dvarim, Einan Eloho Dab Alma. So he wants to say that the one in Shemos wasn't really a tefillah, it was just a request, but it wasn't really a tefillah. Veloba kasha utfila, it wasn't a request in the tefillah, he just wanted to know, he just wanted the knowledge, and Vaidaber Moshe, and Va'era, he wanted the knowledge whether or not the Jews were going to be Goel or not. So, the way the Ra'am answers the question, he doesn't really answer it fully, is that he says that the Rashi is not a stira. In one case, in Va'eschanan, he's showing you that there are three, there's a grouping of three, when Moshe davened, and he was insistent on Hashem answering his tefillah, and the fourth one is different. The fourth one in Va'ira is that he wasn't davening. It says Va'idaber Moshe. If you go back to source number 3, it says Va'idaber Moshe lifnei Hashem lemor. He spoke to Hashem. It doesn't say he davened before Hashem. So it's a different. It's not from tefillah. It's a different. It's a little bit different. So we have to explain what's the main idea here. Why was Moshe insistent in all these situations on an answer? And what's the idea of his insistence? And also, can we explain differently than the Ra'am why Rashi's different? In the first case, he says 4 examples. In the second case, he says 3. And what's the common denominator between all these? Okay, so that's the question. Anybody have any possibilities? Or want to give a possibility? Or anybody want me to ask the question again? No? So I think the idea is as follows. I'm going to give a possibility that I was thinking about. I think that the concept of being insisted on getting an answer is an idea that a person can feel stuck sometimes if he doesn't know, if he can't know something. And one way or the other can drastically affect the way the person moves forward and the way the person perceives or moves forward in his perfection and his pursuit of achieving that level. So what I mean by that is by Moshe. Let's take Moshe. So in all these cases, what's the common denominator? In all these cases, let's take by Miriam. So had Moshe was insistent. Rashi says Moshe was insistent on knowing the answer, whether Hashem would heal Miriam or not. So what it's teaching you that Moshe's idea of Hashem would be different or would have changed based on the answer to his tefillah. If Hashem would have responded to his tefillah, so then Moshe's idea of rachamim, of the rachamim of Hashem, would be different than it had Moshe, or had the idea of Hashem denying his request in his tefillah been. It's the same thing by his own kids and Yehoshua. It's just, in all these cases, the idea is that the way that Hashem would respond to Moshe affected Moshe's perception of God and his ability to move forward. And it would be drastically different based on the answer of Hashem. So by the Geula, if Hashem chose to be Goel HaKadosh Bar, the Jewish people, which he did, so then Moshe's perception of God and Hashgacha and how the Hashgacha works would be different than if Hashem said the other way. So the idea is that Moshe was stuck. Why was he insistent on an answer? Because he couldn't move forward unless he knew. Either way, even whether it was good or bad, it was impossible for Moshe to move forward in terms of developing his knowledge of Hashem without an answer. So let's say he found out that Hashem denied his request for Miriam. So fine, so then he can accept that, and he'll put it in his Rolodex of knowledge of Hashem, and then he'll move forward and he'll keep developing knowledge of Hashem based on that information. But if Hashem answers him the other way, it'll drastically affect the way that he perceives Hashem, and then he'll put it in his Rolodex of knowledge, and he'll continue to achieve. But meaning he was stuck. He was at a point where not knowing the answer prevented him from moving forward. And only if he knew which way Hashem answered, whether it was for him or against him, would he be able to move forward. So a person's like insistent on finding an answer. I was thinking about this in the terms of like blood tests. So a person sometimes just not knowing the answer to a blood test can be more torturous than actually knowing the answer to a blood test. So I was thinking, if you know the answer to a blood test, so if it's one way or the other, then you can move forward and you can decide on your course of action based on that knowledge. But if you don't know, so sometimes you can be stuck, like you're stuck in the mud and you can't move forward. You can't move forward one way or the other. And it's like that with a lot of things, like when you take a test, for example, and you're worried about your score on your test. So you want to know, did I do poorly or did I do well? But then not knowing sometimes prevents you from achieving what's important or achieving something that's beneficial to you. And you get stuck and you can't move forward unless you know. So if you did badly, okay, so you'll study again and you'll go back to the drawing board. If you did well, great. So then you'll move forward based on that knowledge. So it's the same thing with Moshe. So Moshe, in all these situations, the information that was given to him was important for him in terms of moving forward and being able to perceive Hashem properly. So whichever way Hashem answered him would affect his perception of Hashem. So just one other point, though. So what about the grouping? So why in our parsha does he group it as 4, and in Va'eschanan he groups it as 3? So I think there's one other point here. See, the grouping of 3 versus 4 is that 4 is the main idea. 4 is the idea that I just said, which is that all this information had an effect on Moshe's perception of Hashem, that
had Hashem answered him one way, he would have perceived Hashem, or his the way Hashem interacted with the world in one way, and the other way would have also affected his way that he understood the way Hashem interacts with the world. But the three, I think by the three, why does Rashi group them as three in Vayeshanan? Because those three, there was an emotional component too. It wasn't just the rational. See, Moshe loved his sister. He loved Miriam. Or Rashi says that Moshe wanted his kids to be able to take over for his leadership. And in Vayeshanan also, Moshe's desire to go into Eretz Yisrael wasn't just conceptual. He wasn't a robot, but it was emotional. He wanted to go in. There was an emotional, by the Geula, it wasn't really emotional. It was just an understanding. Like, the Ra'am kind of says that. He says that Moshe really was insistent because this knowledge was essential in terms of his continued pursuit. But the other three, by Yehoshua, by Miriam, and by going into Eretz Yisrael, those were all, Moshe's emotions were tied to it, into these answers as well. So, I think Rashi's showing you in Vayeshanan that it wasn't just, sometimes it's just rational. Sometimes there's a rational inability to move forward if you don't know an answer to something. But other times it's emotional. And over here, in these three cases, the grouping of them together is showing you that Moshe was stuck also, not just because of his inability to perceive Hashem properly, but also because he had emotions tied into this area, and the emotions were preventing him from moving forward, from continuing without an answer to these questions. So I think that's the difference between the first Rashi and the second Rashi, but it's the same idea. So the main idea, just to summarize, so the main idea, which is the focus of this year, really, the essential idea, is that there's a common theme in all these examples that Rashi quotes at the end of our Parsha, which is that in all these situations, it's like, I think the test example is the best example, that when a person takes a test, sometimes waiting for the results of the test is actually more painful and harmful to you than actually getting the results. Because if you did badly, then you'll move forward with that information, and if you did well, then you'll also move forward. It's the same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. In these situations, it's showing you that the answers to these questions were critical in terms of Moshe's ability to move forward, in terms of his ability to continue gathering knowledge of Hashem. But specifically in the three, referring to Yehoshua, his sister, and also referring to going to Eretz Yisrael, there was an emotional component too. That it wasn't just the knowledge per se, but it was also that his emotions were tied into this answer and this response, and he couldn't continue forward without knowing an answer. Either he'd be disappointed or he would be elated. But either way, he had to know for an emotional reason as well, in order to move forward and continue his pursuit of the purpose of his life was. Okay, so that's the idea. Any questions? Anybody? Okay, anybody want me to repeat the idea again? Or was it clear?
All right. A quick question.
Sure.
Does that mean that, like, situations like that just never happened before, that he had no basis, like, there's no, like, situation that he could compare it to, or...
Are there other cases in the Torah where this happens, or was he...
More like, does that mean that in these instances, like, these specific situations were, like, first-time situations?
Yeah, I think that these situations, like, the Geula was early on in Moshe's career, so I think that was, like, an essential idea in how he understood, like, how God's Hashgacha works and how God's Rachamim is. So it's really like insight into God's Rachamim over there. But yeah, I think that was the first situation. And like the other situations, like I said, I think that they were personal because it was his sister. He wanted, like Rashi said, he wanted his kids to take over, and it didn't end up being like that. But also the last situation where he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael, that wasn't just for the ideas of Eretz Yisrael, but he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael. There was an emotional, his emotions were tied into a certain answer. So I think that's what. Yeah, so I think it's unique in those situations. I do think so.
So if he had like two reasons. He had the fact that it was emotionally as meaningful to him, but he also wanted to know about the ways of Hashem.
Yeah.
So it's not like a controlled experiment, because his emotional involvement could also affect Hashem's
That's true, but it's not like it's a benefit. I guess his emotions were beneficial in terms of his tefillah by Vayeshanan al Hashem, because You're supposed to, when you daven, you're supposed to pour out your emotions to Hashem. So there's a benefit. Like, it's not a bad thing to have the emotions of, even by his kids taking over for him. I mean, it ended up being that it wasn't, you know, Hashem didn't agree with Moshe's assessment, but the idea that his emotions were engaged in this wasn't a negative. It wasn't a flaw of his. It was a good thing. You know, it's a good thing that he wasn't a robot. He was a human being. I mean, obviously we say that he was a different quality human being and he was on the highest level, but the emotions that he had here were good. They propelled him to daven b'mispalo properly, but I think that they also played a part in his inability to move forward without an answer. But I don't think it's just that. I think it's a combination of the knowledge, and in those situations, it wasn't just the emotions, the emotional tie, it was a component. But I think that's why Rashi has both. The four together is showing you that really there is one theme, which is that in the knowledge, the four together is in the framework of the knowledge. Then in the framework of the knowledge, Moshe needed this knowledge in order to move forward. But the three together is a different grouping. It's showing you that there is a little bit of an emotional reason in by the other three that Moshe couldn't move forward as well. It wasn't just the knowledge itself. Okay, so... Yeah, go ahead.
So maybe the cool thing is that, like, I don't know, maybe the knowledge that he obtained about Hashem when his emotions are not involved is more, like, accurate than it's... Because if his emotions are involved, it could be, like, you know, different factors. It could be, you know, his emotions, it could be that the situation, you know...
Yeah, but like even but Moshe was on the level... It sounds like Moshe's on the level where, yes, if he wanted his kids to take over for him. But he found out that it was Yoshua, so he was able to, because of his, it sounds like, I would assume that because of his level of perfection, he was able to accept it completely and be on board. In fact, the Torah says to us, I'll prove it to you, the Torah says, it's famous, by Yoshua, that really, he only had to put one hand on him, but the Torah says that he put both his hands on Yoshua, to demonstrate his full commitment to Yoshua being the leader. So it shows you that, despite the emotional resistance that Moshe might have had, he was able to overcome it in order, because he recognized that Hashem's decision was the correct decision. So he was able to get behind the decision. So, but until that, yeah, so I'm just showing you that even though Moshe was, he had an emotion, like Rashi says, he wanted his kids to take over. It's natural. A person wants their child to take over their leadership role. And in fact, in the Torah system, actually, there's a famous Gemara and Rambam where it says that usually a child is entitled to that position as long as they're not completely unqualified, but like a Kohen Gadol, usually his son gets first dibs on the Kahuna, Malchus also, any position of leadership. So over here, the thing is that Moshe really wanted his kids to take over, but Hashem chose Yoshua, and even so, Moshe was able to put all of his emotions behind Yoshua and really back Yoshua fully, and he didn't let that, any resistance that he had because he wanted his kids to take over, prevent him from supporting Yoshua completely. So like that shows you the perfection of Moshe. But I'm saying initially the idea was that Moshe had some, his emotions were tied to this response, that he wanted his sons to take over. He was hoping that Hashem would say that, but it didn't end up being like that. Okay? All right. So one other point here, in the tefillah of Moshe, it's very short, like I said before. So there's an interesting Gemara. It says two points, simple points. Look in source number 11. It's Brachos, Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. It's quoted by the Torah Tmima. Both these Gemaras. It's the same. So it says, Tana Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Maisa b'tamad achad, sheyar lefnei ateva, b'fnei Rabbi Eliezer, v'haya marech yoser midai. So there's a case where one of Rabbi Eliezer's students davened, and he was davening for the Amud. Amrulo, he was the shaliach tzibor, Amrulo tamida of Rabbeinu, kama orchan who's there. So they said to him, look how long this guy's davening is, exclamation point. Amr lehem, klom marech yoser mi Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rabbi Eliezer's response was, is there any tefillah longer than Moshe Rabbeinu's? Like, is this tefillah that long that it's longer than Moshe Rabbeinu's? Dichsiv be, it says by Moshe, es arba'im ayom ves arba'im halayla. So he davened for 40 days and 40 nights. That's just after the Egel. Shuv Maisa, so the first case was the students were, I don't know if they were criticizing. It doesn't say they were criticizing. They were enamored by, they were just pointing out the length of the tefillah, and Rabbi Eliezer wasn't impressed by it. He just said, like, Moshe's tefillah was longer. Moshe davened for 40 days and 40 nights. Shuv Maisa B'talmud Echad, Shiar Lefnei Ateva, B'fnei Rabbi Lazar, V'hai Mekater Yosem Yidai. You have the other case, the opposite. So some student got up there and he davened really quickly. It was a very short tefillah. So Amru Lo Tamidav, So his student said to Rabbi Eliezer, "Kama katra nuzeh." Look how short this is. Amar lehem. So he said back to them, "Klo mikatra yosur miMoshe Rabbeinu." Can anybody really have a tefillah that's shorter than Moshe's tefillah? Defsiv kel na refanallah. That's our parsha. So it says that Moshe's tefillah was very short. It was kel na refanallah. So that's the end of the Gemara. And then it says Amar of Yaakov, Amar of Chista, kol mavakish rachmim machaveh, or ein tzarach lahashkir yishmo. This is the second point. Anybody who's davening for his friend doesn't have to mention his friend's name explicitly. Shneamar, kel na refanallah, that Moshe said, please heal her. Velo kamidkar shema de Miriam, but he didn't mention Miriam's name. And the tefillah doesn't say, please heal Miriam. So we learn out two ideas from kel na refanallah. One idea is that there's no value to the length of your tefillah, and it could be really long or really short. And the second idea is that when you daven for somebody else, you don't have to mention their name. There's no need to mention their name. So we have to understand both ideas. So what's the purpose of this story in the Gemara about the two students that daven? One was really long and the other one was really short, and Rabbi Eliezer's response. And the second question is, why not? Why don't you have to mention? It sounds like there's a havamina, there's a thought in the Gemara that you should have to mention the person's name that you're davening for. If you're davening to heal Rachel Bas Sarah, you should mention the name Rachel Bas Sarah. But you don't have to. You can just have it in mind. So what's that point? Why is it okay that you don't mention the name? So those are the two ideas here, two questions, right? So what's the answer? So the first idea, which was, there's two ways to go in answering it, but it's basically the same point. The Torah Tmimah kind of hints to it. He says, Ulahefech, look in source number 13. He says, Ulahefech mevi b'gemar kan, maisa b'echot shiar lefnei ateba b'fnei rov lazer, v'ayam marach yos midai. So the Gemara brings in the case where the guy's davening was really, really long. Amru lo tamidav, koma orchan huzeh. So look how long this tefillah is. Amar lehu, he said to them, Klo marech hu yosar mi Moshe Rabbeinu dechziv bei esar ba'im ayom, esar ba'im alayla, asher yisnapalti lefnei Hashem. So his response was that there's no way he was davening longer than Moshe, because Moshe davened for 40 days and 40 nights, and this guy, who's the Shliach Tzibor, he's not davening for 40 days and 40 nights. L'nus bar b'gemara tam yisron akitzar v'arichus. So Gemara doesn't give the reason for it. Aval b'sifri mevayer hatam. The Sifri explains the reason. D'yesha sh'ru'i l'katzer. There are times where it's appropriate to be short, have a short tefillah. V'yesha sh'ru'i l'harich. V'kan ha'isa shah goremes l'katzer. By kel na refanallah, it was important for him to shorten it. Kadesh lo yomru achoso omez pitzaravu umespala. So there's a Rashi, that Kamosha Parish Rashi. Rashi explains that Moshe shortened his tefillah so that the people who were looking at him wouldn't think that he wasn't doing anything to help her, that he was just davening, but he wasn't doing anything else. So he shortened his tefillah. So what's the Torah Tmima saying? So the Torah Tmima is saying that what's the purpose of our Gemara is that it's teaching an idea about tefillah, which is that a person thinks that the length of tefillah is objective, that there's an objective quality to a certain length of tefillah. Kamash Mulan, the Gemara is showing you that your tefillah really has to conform this to the situation that you're in. Tefillah is not it's somewhat liquid. I mean, it's not solid. It's not objective in length. It's liquid. It conforms to the situation. So some situations demand longer tefillah, and some situations demand shorter tefillah. You can't really judge a tefillah and the value of a tefillah based on its length. And that's the chiddush here. So the chiddush to the Havamina and the Gemara is that there's an objective length to tefillah, that tefillah should be a certain length. And if you're too long, then you're being too wordy. And if you're too short, then it's also a begam, because you're being too concise. So the chiddush is saying, no, that your tefillah can be perfect in its in the short form or in the long form, but your tefillah always has to conform to the situation that arises. So there's no idea of an objective length of tefillah. So I think nowadays, b'zman hazeh, people see that some people daven for hours. Sometimes it's frustrating. Some people daven really short. But the point is that you can't, it's true, we have a uniform tefillah, but people say their own bakashas in tefillah, and you can't really judge the tefillah's value based on its length or based on how long a person davens for. A person can daven for a long, long time, and it could be inappropriate for the situation. A person can daven for a short time, and it could be very appropriate, and vice versa. So it all is, the whole idea here is that tefillah, there's no objectivity to the length of the tefillah. It really conforms to the situation and the environment that you're davening for. So that's one of the chidushim that Moshe was trying to demonstrate by his sister, by Miriam. But what's the other idea? The second idea in Kel Na Refanallah is that when you daven for somebody else, you don't have to say their name. So the question is, why not? Why don't you have to say their name? Does anybody have a possibility? Because whenever the Gemara teaches you an idea, there's always a havamina, which means that there's always a thought the other way. You might have thought that you do have to mention the name. Kamash Mulan, the Gemara is telling you, no, you don't have to mention the person's name. So when you're davening any tefillah, and you're, let's say you're saying Rifaino, and you're thinking about a certain chola, a person who's sick, you don't have to actually say the person's name. You don't have to say Miriam. You can actually just think it in your mind, and that's good enough. So what is that telling you? Well, what's the idea? But it doesn't say that you shouldn't think it. I mean, you shouldn't say it. Sorry, it doesn't say you shouldn't say it. You can say it, but you don't have to. It says, Eino tzarech. The Gemara says, Kol mevakesh rachmi malchaveiro, ein tzarech lahazkir shmo. You don't have to mention it. So there's no problem with not mentioning it. So what's the Gemara teaching you? Right? So I think this is one other chiddush based on our... Anybody have a possibility? What's the Gemara teaching you? Why don't you have to state the person's name? Or why is that not necessary? Okay, so... Go ahead.
Saying the name doesn't make it better. Okay, good. Okay. Or maybe it's that Hashem knows what you're thinking.
Excellent. Okay, but then if that were the case, then you should always... That's a great answer. But if that were the case, then you should always just stand there and just think. Why do you have to say anything? Meaning, your whole tefillah should just be your thoughts. Just stand there, think, Hashem is great, Hashem is great, Hashem is great. Can you give me this? Can you give me that? Can you give me that? Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then you're done. Like, why do you have to say anything in your davening? But that's a great, I like your approach. Very good. So, what's the answer to that?
Okay, I guess we say things.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, like, maybe, like, we say things in order to bring a thought to mind, but if the thought's already there, then there's no reason to say it, maybe.
Okay, okay, excellent. Okay, so I think I'm going to try an approach here. So I think that sometimes, like by vidui, we say vidui, confession, and tshuva demands enunciation. You have to say it. You can't just think it. So there's a value to enunciation, which is that when you think about something in your heart, there's sometimes when you think about something, you don't say it, it's not a reality to you. Meaning you might be thinking it, but there's always a possibility of going back on it. And it's never concrete. Whereas when you say something, when you make a declaration, this is what I did. For instance, by vidui, you say, Ana Hashem Chatasi, Avisi Pashati, I was a sinner. So when you say that, it forces you to actualize and affirm these ideas, or these points. And really, a person has resistance by vidui to admit to the fact that you're a sinner, and you have to enunciate it. So I think by tefillah too, there's a value to the enunciation, which is that if you're just thinking something, so oftentimes you can question it, or it's not real to you. You can't; it doesn't exist in a real framework to you, but it's lacking in terms of its reality. But when you enunciate something, when you say Hashem Hakel Gadol Gibor Vanora, when you talk about the greatness of Hashem, so it really concretizes those ideas to you, and it's not the same as just thinking. But when it comes to refuah, I think when it comes to being mevakesh rachamim, so you're really tapping into the idea, what I think my mother-in-law said, you're tapping into the idea that Hashem is omniscient. You're tapping into the idea of His omniscience. Because even refa'inu, if you ask Hashem to heal somebody, so what is healing based on? Healing is really based on Hashem's complete and utter knowledge of the human body and how man was created. And the ability to heal somebody is because Hashem built the human structure and the human body and all the components, He is capable of healing it. So it's really tapping into the omniscience of God, God's all knowledge, God's knowledge, and the way that God knows humanity. So in the framework of Rachamim, and in the framework of Refuah, like by Miriam, so when it comes to that, you don't have to mention the name. Because on the one hand, there's a benefit to enunciation, because enunciation makes something a reality. But on the other hand, when you're trying to tap into, or you're trying to acknowledge the idea that Hashem is all-knowing, which is a feature of Refa'inu, which is a feature of when you're being Mevakesh Rachamim for somebody, so there's no need to enunciate. In fact, by not enunciating, you're actually acknowledging the idea that Hashem knows what you're thinking. So in some situations, I'd say that it depends on what type of tefillah you're davening, or which aspect, or which part of tefillah, but sometimes you have to enunciate, because enunciation makes it real. But other times, There's no problem with keeping it inside, because especially when your tefillah is focused on the idea of Hashem knowing everything and being omniscient. So in those situations, there's no problem with not saying the name. You don't have to enunciate, because the concept is that you're trying to realize or acknowledge the concept that Hashem knows all, and that he knows your thoughts and he knows what you're thinking. So it's kind of what my mother-in-law said, which is that on the one hand, the Hava Mina was that you have to say it, because really, all tefillah demands enunciation. The Chiddush is saying, no, it depends on which part of tefillah, but certain parts of tefillah, when you're trying to accept the idea that Hashem knows all and that he's capable of knowing everything, so in those situations, there's no benefit. Eino tzarach, you don't have to mention the name, because but when you don't mention the name, there's a benefit to that. You're actually acknowledging the idea that Hashem knows all, and you don't have to say it. But there's no problem with saying it. That's the point. The Gemara is saying it's not a problem to say the name, but you don't have to. So that's the idea that the Gemara is saying. The Meiri, we don't have so much time, but the Meiri says, it sounds like the Meiri is saying that it's actually better not to say the name. But I don't think we hold like that. I think practically we hold that if you're davening, you can do either or. You can either have it in mind, or you can say it in your Rifaina. So either one's okay. Okay, so that's the idea. That's the answer. So let me just summarize. Really, just 3 points in the shir. The first point, which is the main point, majority of the shir, was tied to this idea that Moshe, there are instances in the Torah where Moshe demanded an answer from Hashem. So what does that mean? It means that Moshe's idea of Hashkacha and how Hashem interacted with the world is Rachamim, all those, the ways of Hashem, in these situations, he needed an answer, because his idea of Hashem's actions and Hashem's interaction would be different based on the answer of Hashem, and it would affect his ability to move forward. And I gave you a lot of examples, but the clearest example is the test example, when a person doesn't know how he did on a test, let's say to get into a graduate school. So you just want to know the answer. Sometimes it's harmful to not know the answer, because if you knew, then you could just respond. If you did poorly, you'll just study more. If you did well, then you'll be happy and you can move forward and apply to school. So the response is sometimes critical to moving forward. So in these instances too, Moshe needed this knowledge. But in the other three, then we said that there's two groupings. One grouping is a grouping of four, which is the general idea that Moshe needed this knowledge in terms of Hashem's response. But the second is the grouping of three, which is that there seemed to be in the three, there's more of an emotional component, that Moshe's emotions were engaged in the answers and the response. And it wasn't just the knowledge that was creating this stop sign for him, but it was also his emotions. Okay, so that's the first point. And then the second point was this idea of that tefillah can't be judged based on its length. It really conforms to the situation that you're in. So some situations demand long, some situations demand short, and really you can't judge tefillah or the value of tefillah and its benefit based on its length. And the last idea is this concept of not mentioning the name. So we said that on the one hand, it's important to enunciate tefillah because it makes it a reality to you. It's not something that you can deny in your heart. You have to enunciate Hashem HaKel Gadol Gibor. There can't be any part of you that denies it. And by stating it, it's really making it real to you. But when it comes to being Mevakish Rachamim for your friend, and you're tapping into and you're trying to acknowledge or accept the idea of God's omniscience, so really you don't have to say the name, because when you don't say the name, you're really accepting the idea that Hashem knows your thoughts. And that in itself is the perfection. So the Gemara is saying that you don't have to say the name, then Moshe didn't say the name of Miriam when he davened for Miriam, because of that very idea. Okay? All right. Anybody have any questions, or I want to add anything?
I have a question.
Sure.
So, where do we get the idea then now, where we say, in Shul, Mishabeth?